And this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell, Dan Friedel, and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is John Russell.
Scientists studying the beginnings of the virus behind COVID-19 say a growing body of evidence argues for expanding the search beyond China into Southeast Asia. Such research could give information about how to prevent the next pandemic. Since the first confirmed outbreak of COVID-19 in the Chinese city of Wuhan in December 2019, researchers have been looking for the starting point of the virus in China itself. The virus's closest known relative shares some 96% of its genetic material. It is another coronavirus found early last year in the southern area of Yunnan. But some recent studies have found more viruses nearly as similar in Thailand and Cambodia. SARS-CoV-2 is the name of the virus that causes COVID-19 disease. Scientists have already identified more than 100 SARS-related coronaviruses in bats across China, said Peter Daszak. He is a virus expert who joined the World Health Organization TRIP to search for the origins of the virus in China. He told VOA, "It may be that the origin really was in Yunnan, but my best guess is that we need to look in Myanmar, Laos, Vietnam, and then even farther south." China has refused to provide data on some of the earliest cases of COVID-19. Even so, Daszak said, the Chinese scientists and the WHO experts agreed that SARS-CoV-2's most likely way into humans was from bats through some sort of farmed wildlife. Early last year, scientists from China and Australia reported finding viruses matching SARS-CoV-2 by more than 90% in Malayan pangolins. The creatures had been illegally brought into southern China from Southeast Asia. A few months later, scientists found viruses close to SARS-CoV-2 in horseshoe bats that had been collected in Cambodia more than 10 years ago. Then, in February, scientists in Thailand also found viruses closely matching SARS-CoV-2 in bats not far from Bangkok. They also found antibodies effective against SARS-CoV-2 in a pangolin. It was seized by local authorities in the country's south, near Malaysia. Supaporn Wacharapalasadi, a scientist at the Chulalongkorn University in Bangkok, Thailand, took part in the recent study. She called it an important discovery in the search for the origins of SARS-CoV-2. She said the search for those origins should lead wherever the bats that host its closest known relatives live. To get closer to the beginning of SARS-CoV-2, virus hunters are looking for matches even closer than the 96% of the kind found in Yunnan last year. The viruses found in Thailand and Cambodia were 91% to 93% similar. I'm John Russell.
Özlem Turca started the German drug company BioNTech with her husband, Uğur Şahin, in 2008. The two are now known for doing important work on the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine against the coronavirus. But they started their company to work on a cure for cancer. In fact, the doctors started a different company about 20 years ago to work on cancer drugs. They sold that company for about $1 billion in 2016. BioNTech was looking for a way to cause the body's immune system to fight tumors with a technology called messenger RNA, or mRNA. In early 2020, Turca and Şahin heard about a new virus that was infecting people in China. They thought they could find a way to use their technology to fight it. They had already been working with Pfizer on a new influenza vaccine. They created a new project to find a vaccine for the new coronavirus and called it Project Lightspeed. Within 11 months, Britain approved use of the coronavirus vaccine they developed working with Pfizer. 1 week later, the U.S. approved the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine for emergency use. Now, tens of millions of people around the world have received their vaccine. Turca said she was not worried about finding a way to make a coronavirus vaccine. Instead, she was worried about how her small company would create enough of the vaccine for all who would need it. Pfizer and BioNTech worked with a Chinese company called Fosun Pharma to increase their ability to produce the vaccine. It pays off to make bold decisions and to trust that if you have an extraordinary team, you will be able to solve any problem and obstacle which comes your way in real time, Turca told the Associated Press. She said working together with international companies was important to their success. The vaccines from Moderna and AstraZeneca also use mRNA technology. Treatments of this kind use mRNA to carry instructions that tell the body to make proteins that attack viruses. Turca and Şahin said they think they can do the same thing for cancer tumors. "We have several different cancer vaccines based on mRNA," Turca said. She said she thinks BioNTech will develop its cancer drugs so they can be offered to people within a few years. Right now, however, the company is continuing to work to be sure it can fulfill coronavirus vaccine orders and deal with variants of the virus. I'm Dan Friedel.
A new study suggests lightning strikes that hit Earth after its formation may have unlocked a necessary chemical element to support the beginning of life. Researchers say the lightning may have supplied enough phosphorus to Earth during the first billion years after the planet was formed. Scientists believe life started on Earth about 3.5 to 4.5 billion years ago. Phosphorus is an important element for the formation of life. It helps form cell structures and supports DNA, the material present in nearly all living organisms. But on early Earth, phosphorus is believed to have been locked inside minerals that cannot dissolve in water. Until now, it was widely believed that meteorites that struck Earth were mainly responsible for the presence of bioavailable phosphorus. Some meteorites contain a phosphorus mineral called schreibersite, a highly reactive mineral that can form organic molecules. But when lightning strikes the ground, it can create glassy rocks called fulgurites by superheating and sometimes vaporizing rocks on the surface. This process frees the phosphorus locked inside. As a result, these fulgurites can contain schreibersite, which is soluble in water, where life is thought to have formed. Researchers in the United States and Britain estimated that early Earth saw 1 to 5 billion lightning strikes hit Earth each year, compared to about 560 million yearly today. That would add up to 1 quintillion strikes after a billion years, forming at least 1 billion fulgurites. A study describing the research results recently appeared in the publication Nature Communications. The researchers said phosphorus minerals caused by lightning strikes were found to have been higher by about 3.5 billion years ago. This is about the age of the earliest known fossils widely accepted to be those of microorganisms, the researchers found. Lightning strikes, therefore, may have been a significant part of the emergence of life on Earth, said Benjamin Hess, a Yale University graduate student in Earth and Planetary Sciences. He was the lead writer of the study. Hess told Reuters news agency that unlike meteorite hits that generally decrease over time, lightning strikes can happen continuously over a planet's history. He added that this means lightning strikes may also be a very important element for providing the phosphorus needed for the emergence of life on other Earth-like planets. The researchers also examined an unusually large fulgurite formed when lightning struck near a home outside Chicago, Illinois, in 2016. Our research shows that the production of bioavailable phosphorus by lightning strikes may have been underestimated, study co-writer Jason Harvey told Reuters. He is a professor of geochemistry at Britain's University of Leeds. Among the materials considered necessary for life are water, carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, sulfur, and phosphorus, along with an energy source. Scientists believe the earliest bacteria-like organisms were formed in Earth's early waters. But there is a debate over when this happened and whether it happened in warm and shallow waters or in deeper waters. Hess said that new research does not completely cancel the theory that meteorites could have been another source of life-giving phosphorus. Meteor impacts around the time of the emergence of life are far less than thought a decade ago, Hess said. But I don't see our work as a competition against meteorites as a source of phosphorus. The more sources, the better, he added. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Today we continue the story of the 37th President of the United States, Richard Nixon. The year is 1969. Richard Nixon, a Republican, is in the first year of his first term in office. His biggest foreign policy problem is the continuing war in Vietnam. During the election campaign, Nixon had promised to do something to end the war. The question was, what? Some Americans want him to withdraw troops from Vietnam immediately. Bring the soldiers home, they say. Others believe the United States should take whatever measures are necessary to win. Expand the ground war, they say, or even use nuclear weapons. Withdrawing troops would leave South Vietnam alone to resist communist North Vietnam. Yet, that was the reason the United States had entered the conflict, to prevent the communists from capturing the South. Expanding the war would not be an easy decision either. Already, by 1969, more Americans had died in Vietnam than had died during the Korean War. For Richard Nixon, the war is a terrible test. If he fails, his presidency could end the way Lyndon Johnson's presidency ended. Johnson decided not to run for re-election after he lost public and political support for his war policies. Presidents have advisors, and Nixon's most important advisor was Henry Kissinger. Kissinger was an expert on foreign relations. He later served as Nixon's Secretary of State. Together, they tried many ways to settle the conflict in Vietnam. It took several years before the involvement of the United States would finally end. The American efforts were both diplomatic and military. Peace talks were taking place in Paris. But the Nixon administration started secret peace talks in Paris at the same time. The administration also withdrew some troops from Vietnam. Yet, secretly, it sent other troops into Cambodia. And it began bombing neighboring Laos. The Nixon administration also started bombing North Vietnam again. Lyndon Johnson had stopped the raids a few years earlier. Efforts to end American involvement in Vietnam did not begin immediately. For his first 8 months in office, President Nixon made no major policy changes. Then, in October 1969, he ordered the withdrawal of 60,000 troops. He said he acted to speed the peace talks. He also ordered American commanders to give the South Vietnamese most of the responsibility for fighting. Americans were happy that fewer troops would be involved, but many were unhappy that the withdrawal was not complete. Huge anti-war demonstrations took place in the United States in the autumn of 1969. On November 15th, several hundred thousand people protested in Washington. Nixon tried to explain to the American people why he was not ordering an immediate withdrawal. In his words, "It is not the easy way, it is the right way." In the spring of 1970, American and South Vietnamese troops invaded Cambodia.
"Tonight, American and South Vietnamese units will attack the headquarters for the entire communist military operation in South Vietnam."
Nixon described to the American public why he had decided to order the actions in Cambodia.
"This key control center has been occupied by the North Vietnamese and Viet Cong for 5 years in blatant violation of Cambodia's neutrality. This is not an invasion of Cambodia. The areas in which these attacks will be launched are completely occupied and controlled by North Vietnamese forces. Once enemy forces are driven out of these sanctuaries and once their military supplies are destroyed, we will withdraw."
Early in 1971, the Nixon administration decided to provide air and artillery support for a South Vietnamese invasion of Laos. The goal was to stop supplies from reaching North Vietnam through that neighboring country. South Vietnamese forces destroyed many enemy weapons, but they also suffered heavy losses, and many American planes were shot down. After 6 weeks, the South Vietnamese were forced to withdraw. Many members of the United States Congress were angry. They said the invasion of Laos was another in a long series of failures. Nixon's administration had said the United States was winning the war. Opposition Democrats in Congress said the administration was lying. Criticism by the American public grew louder as well. Demonstrations took place across the country, including on college campuses. On May 4, 1970, National Guard troops shot and killed four students during protests at Kent State University in Ohio. This is what Neil Young means when he sings of four dead in Ohio in a famous protest song that he wrote in reaction to the killings. "Ten soldiers and Nixon's coming. We're finally on our own. This summer I hear the drumming. Four dead in Ohio." President Nixon said again that the United States must not permit North Vietnam to take over South Vietnam. Lyndon Johnson had said the same thing when he was president. Many Americans had accepted the war, but as it continued and as more Americans died in Vietnam, public opinion changed. In 1965, 61% of those questioned said they approved of the war. By 1971, 61% said they did not approve of it. The official peace talks in Paris offered little hope of a negotiated settlement. Over a period of several years, each side made proposals only to have the other side reject them. President Nixon wanted to address the public's anger over the war, so he announced that Henry Kissinger had held 12 secret meetings with North Vietnamese officials. But those secret meetings made no more progress than the official talks. In late March 1972, North Vietnam launched a major offensive. In May, Nixon ordered increased bombing against roads and railways in the north. By the end of August, the communist offensive had been stopped. Yet many lives had been lost. The pressure to withdraw American forces grew stronger. For the next 5 months, the Nixon administration continued a policy of official talks, secret meetings, and increased military action. Finally, the president announced that an agreement had been reached at the peace talks in Paris. There would be a ceasefire, and negotiators from the United States, South Vietnam, North Vietnam, and the Viet Cong would sign the agreement. Under the terms of the agreement, all American and Allied forces would withdraw from South Vietnam. The North and South would be free to settle their conflict without interference from other countries. President Nixon announced the news from the White House.
At 12:30 Paris time today, January 23, 1973, the agreement on ending the war and restoring peace in Vietnam was initialed by Dr. Henry Kissinger on behalf of the United States and Special Advisor Lee Duc Tho on behalf of the Democratic Republic of Vietnam. The agreement will be formally signed by the parties participating in the Paris Conference on Vietnam on January 27, 1973, at the International Conference Center in Paris. The United States and the Democratic Republic of Vietnam express the hope that this agreement will ensure stable peace in Vietnam and contribute to the preservation of lasting peace in Indochina and Southeast Asia.
Yet the fighting continued and would continue even after Nixon resigned from office in 1974. April 30th, 1975, marked the fall of Saigon, the South Vietnamese capital, after the withdrawal of American troops. The North Vietnamese had planned a 2-year campaign to take Saigon. It would take them just 55 days. Another foreign policy issue for the Nixon administration was China. Here was Nixon's chance to shine as a statesman. Communists took power in China in 1949. The United States, however, did not recognize the Communist Party government on the mainland. Instead, it recognized the nationalist Chinese government in Taiwan. In the early 1970s, the Nixon administration began trying to improve relations. It eased restrictions on travel to China, and it supported a visit to China by the United States table tennis team, so-called ping-pong diplomacy. Then President Nixon made a surprise announcement. He himself would visit China. The historic event took place in February 1972. Chinese Premier Zhou Enlai and Party Chairman Mao Zedong greeted the American president. Nixon and Zhou Enlai held talks that opened new possibilities for trade. The next year, Nixon sent a representative to open a diplomatic office in Beijing. After more than 20 years, the two countries were communicating again. They would not establish full relations, however, until 1979, when the United States stopped recognizing Taiwan. Many Americans were happy at the easing of tensions with China, even as the Cold War with the Soviet Union continued. Many were proud to see their president standing at the Great Wall of China. Historians would later call it the greatest moment in the presidency of Richard Nixon. In fact, Nixon might have been remembered as one of America's greatest presidents if not for a break-in at Democratic Party headquarters. It led to a history-changing series of events that came to be known as Watergate.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.